Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. The good news is this. Coming up later on, a really fun conversation with Dog Nation's recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. We kind of got into a lot of the latest on UGA recruiting, a little bit deeper dive on Lavoisier Carroll. He and I really hadn't done that yet. A little bit more on Micah Morris and a discussion about what's next for Georgia's 2021 class. What could be wrong with that, right? Everything's great. I guess the unfortunate byproduct of this is... I hate to sell it this way. The audio quality is not like pristine. We did this through video this morning on the Dog Nation Daily presented by ESOG video broadcast, and it's just kind of okay. And listen, there's a lot of that these days. You know, I'm watching TV and you're seeing so much of this stuff being recorded from home. Obviously, the NFL draft is coming up and a version of that's going to be very homespun as well. And so I guess we're sort of all kind of making do with what we can. I've tried to improve the audio the best that I could. Sometimes that signal is just not crystal clear. And today it's an example of that. I hope you'll be patient with it. Whether your radio podcast today, our friends on 960 The Ref, or those of you that access the podcast through traditional podcast channels, I hope that you'll be patient with that, because Jeff's got some good stuff to say. It just doesn't sound exactly perfect when he says that. So as a way of kind of setting you up for that coming up in just a few minutes, let me also begin this way. You may remember yesterday I talked a little bit about the ESPN tweet from the day before, whenever it was, about the so-called top 10 RBU schools and how Georgia wasn't even in the top 10 for the BCS, the college football playoff era. And I kind of mocked that on Twitter and obviously used that as show fodder yesterday. But the one thing that I hope that you notice is that at no point in time was I really legitimately mad. I just don't get mad about people's hot takes. I don't think the ESPN thing was intentional. I don't think they're being intentionally provocative, because I don't think they put that much thought into it. I just think they're maybe not that bright when it comes to certain things like that. But ultimately, I don't get mad about this kind of thing, because it's all just content and it's all sort of, you know, made to be fodder for somebody else's content, springboard for our own discussion, stuff like that. So I really don't take a ton of this kind of stuff personally. Every now and then, I think it's fair to point out when something is just flat wrong. But in terms of getting upset about it, I just don't really do that. And I kind of feel the same way about what I'm about to play for you here, too. You're going to like this because I think you're going to laugh at it. It's, I think, from the perspective of a Georgia fan, clearly wrong. Obviously, it is red meat for us because we're Gator haters. But recently, Dari Noka, Jordan Rogers, two guys that are pretty well fixtures in the SEC network, they got together to share some opinions. And Rogers really went pretty heavy on the notion that this is the year that Florida overtakes Georgia. Now, as I said before, I'm not mad about this. I'm going to explain to you why I think it's wrong, and I'm going to give you kind of a clue that you can look for in the future for when you want to see just how wrong other opinions like this on television or podcast or streaming video or, you know, written pieces kind of are. I think we're going to have some fun deconstructing this, but ultimately this is more fodder for jokes than it is fodder to be taken seriously. But either way, is it former Bachelor contestant? Is that what Jordan Rogers was? Or Bachelorette, whatever it was that he was on. Either way, Rogers, also the former Vanderbilt quarterback and SEC network analyst, believes that after a long time of waiting, this may be the year for Florida. Here is Jordan Rogers on, I guess, some version of the SEC network.
I think Florida and Georgia have a chance of switching. I look at Florida and I go, it's got to be now. I mean, it has to be. When you look at Georgia, they got Jamie Newman, who didn't have a chance to have a full spring, maybe not a full summer. New offensive coordinator, new quarterback. You lose three guys on the up front in the O-line to the NFL draft. You look at Florida, their quarterback's back. Both their quarterbacks. So I think Emory Jones is going to have a bigger role this year, but this is Kyle Trask's team. They have talent all around. And the biggest question mark for Florida last year was, can they run the football? This offensive line, are they good? Sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't. This is going to be the most experienced unit in the SEC with no spring ball in Florida when they come back in fall camp. I think they got a chance to be really good. So this has got to be Florida's year because of Kyle Trask, yeah. His development. They have some pieces to fill out around him, losing four of their top five receivers. But Kyle Pitts is special as a tight end. He's going to take a monster step as well. And yeah. I think Florida is going to be ahead of Georgia, especially early, and I think they might stay there.
Okay, so as I deconstruct this, Can I kind of give you a little bit of a kind of out there theory on hot takes in general? You can look around all areas of life, whether it be frivolous things like sports, more serious things like what other things are going on in the news these days. It's pretty obvious to see the so-called pundits, the people who are giving their opinions for a living. Nobody knows anything. Everybody's just as likely to get something right as get something wrong. All of this is essentially a coin flip, and correct predictions happen about as frequently as chance would dictate. So ultimately, the determination of whether a hot take is a good one or not, to me, is not so much based on did the prediction come true, because you basically got about a 50-50 chance of that happening. I think the difference between a good hot take and a bad hot take is, did you start with research that led to a conclusion, or did you start with a conclusion and then work backwards to go find some research? I think the problem I'm going to have with Jordan Rodgers' hot take here on Florida is it seems like he started with the premise that this is the year that Florida overtakes Georgia and then worked backwards from there to come up with some points to justify his answer. Because if you really kind of get deeply into this for a moment, a lot of what Rodgers says here doesn't really make a lot of logical sense. For instance, let me give you a quick example of this. On the one hand, he says it's a problem for Georgia that Jamie Newman did not get a chance to go through spring practice. But on the other hand, he's expecting big things from Emory Jones at Florida, I guess, as kind of a special package quarterback behind Kyle Trask. This is an example of something that I don't think you can have this both ways. You can't say Jamie Newman's going to be hurt by not having a spring practice, but watch out for Emory Jones this fall. Listen, Jamie Newman has played a lot more football than Emory Jones has. Now, you may say, well, he played it at Wake Forest instead of Georgia, and that's true. And obviously, that might upend his chemistry just a bit. But Emory Jones hasn't played with anybody. Emory Jones has essentially only been a practice player and a guy that sort of, you know, pops on the field every now and then, and at least one of those instances in 2018. I think that was an attempt at Dan Mullen to troll Kirby Smart by even putting him on the field. But nonetheless, Emory Jones has just not played a ton of football. He's an interesting prospect and a guy at one point in time you may remember that Georgia even thought it might be interested in. But beyond all of that, Jones is not a guy who's played much. So if you're going to say that no spring practice hurts Jamie Newman, who has been a starting quarterback, you'd have to say the same thing about Emory Jones, who really hasn't played much at all. But obviously Jordan Rodgers doesn't do that. And then he goes on to talk about the experience of Florida's offensive line. Where is this coming from? Now, I'm not even saying this is someone who touts for Georgia and argues for UGA. If I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm rolling my eyes big time at this, because when Georgia fans think about, you know, upcoming competition in the SEC East, I'm not telling you that I think that Tennessee as a team is going to be really good. I think we're still too far away from being able to know that for sure. But in terms of the kind of offensive line you got to be aware of, and in terms of the kind of offensive line you have to game plan for, you better believe that the Tennessee offensive line, which features Brandon Kennedy, a guy who's played a lot, Trey Smith, back now to full health, a guy who's played a lot, guys like Darnell Wright, Wanya Morris on the field a ton for Tennessee a year ago. That's an offensive line in the SEC East, I think the Georgia fans have to be aware of. Frankly, I don't know that Florida's offensive line gets my attention one way or another. And the inability to run the ball a year ago, if you're being, I think, objective and working from a point of research leading to a conclusion as opposed to a conclusion in search of research to support it, I think you've got to say that the unanswered questions about Florida's running game still remain. Yes, they bring in Lorenzo Lingard, and I realize that Lingard was a former five-star, but you know, there's a reason why he was on the open market to begin with, and I think that deep down, Jordan Rodgers probably knows that. Now, to the credit of Dari Noka, who's doing the streaming video deal with Jordan Rodgers and all of this, he does kind of push back on the issues with Florida defensively and the fact that the Gators are losing a lot off the defense, but Jordan Rodgers, who's got his mind made up, well, that wasn't anything to slow him down. Here's more of Dari Noka and Jordan Rodgers, with Rodgers really apparently a big believer in those Florida Gators.
Lost a little bit of defense, though. And, I mean, we're talking about guys that could get after the quarterback, no question about that. How much of a concern is that when you look at putting Florida ahead of Georgia?
Oh, it's big. And one of the things I looked at, because I do think Georgia's defense is going to be one of the best in the country again, but they also had five games in the SEC where they only scored three touchdowns, and that was with Jake Fromm. So that offense is the biggest question mark. Florida's defense, I think you can replace a Jonathan Greenard. As good of a player he is, the biggest question mark I'm worried about is C.J. Henderson. Because if you look at this defense that Todd Grantham wants to put in place, having locked down elite corners is big to the pressures that he wants to bring. So they got to find a couple more guys in the back that can lock down without a doubt. You don't have to worry about so they can bring pressure and get exotic when they need to. I think they'll get there, though.
Okay, so once again, as someone who gives hot takes for a living, let me make sure you are aware of the rhetorical device that Jordan Rodgers just employed. He was brought up questions about the Florida defense and was forced to briefly acknowledge that the UGA defense on paper right now seems deeper, seems more experienced, seems more poised for a good season. But since that doesn't help his argument, Rodgers immediately kind of pivots away from that back to the Georgia offense because that's a place where he felt like he had firmer ground to stand on. Now, Rodgers is not doing this because he's a UGA hater. I don't think he is. I think Rodgers wants to make a point that Florida is going to be better than Georgia because to ESPN and SEC Network folks, that's just a more interesting argument to have right now. But the fact that Rodgers ties himself in knots to make that case, I think gives you an idea of how far-fetched that really is. Because after all, Rodgers started these clips by saying, this is going to be Florida's year. It has to be Florida's year. And here's the point that I think the Georgia fans would say in response to that. It actually doesn't have to happen. And it may not happen. Just because that would be the more interesting outcome, something other than the same team winning for a fourth consecutive year, just because that would be more interesting to actually watch occur for some people who want parity in the league or predict that to occur right now in a time in which you got to find some way to fill content somehow, just because that might be to some the more interesting outcome does not mean that's the way that it has to take place. I think you can start to sort of put Florida in the category of Texas and some of these other teams who are constantly being proclaimed as being back, only to ultimately be disappointed by the end result. I think that's the way it's going to go down for Florida this year. Rodgers says it has to be their year. Under Dan Mullen, they may not actually ever have one of those years. It may just not come together because I think objectively speaking, when you look at holes in the roster, Florida's got more than Georgia does. I'm not confident that Georgia wins every game in 2020, but I'm still pretty confident they beat the Gators. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. And it is good to have you with us. We are presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. Of course, we're still on video every morning at 10 a.m. Hope you'll join us there for a fun conversation. But the traditional show, the way you've come to expect it, here on both radio and 960 The Ref, a podcast form there as well. We're just glad to have you a part of it with us. We're brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And, of course, if you've got a cracked foundation or a wet basement or a damp crawl space, ESOG is a solutions-oriented company. That means if you've got a simple fix, they'll just tell you how to do that. But if it's a more substantial issue, and sometimes it is, you want to trust my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They also offer a fully transferable triple protection warranty on materials, installation, and design. And the reason why you want to trust them for a big-time tough problems is simply because what they provide for you, two full-time engineers on staff, the ability to get big-time fixes to big-time problems. That's what Engineered Solutions of Georgia provides. They're also a proud partner of UGA. That's another good reason to do business with the whole team over there. Easy to get in touch with as well. You can simply call them up. Dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, we're going to have a fun edition of our program here coming up. As I said before, we're going to welcome in Jeff Sintel here in just a moment. You know, I hope you'll like what Jeff has to say today. Good stuff on Lavoisier Carroll. Good stuff on Micah Morris. Some interesting stuff as well on the current team. Zach Evans' name even comes up in this discussion because I was taking some questions from our audience on both Facebook and YouTube today, giving them some freedom to kind of talk about this the way they wanted to. So it's kind of a wide-ranging conversation. It is about a C-plus in terms of the audio quality. On my end, I think it was fine. On Jeff's end, maybe not the firmest connection all the way around, but really for the most part, really good stuff from Jeff. So hopefully you'll be patient with us on that today. And I hope you'll stick with us for after the Jeff Sintel interview is done, because one of the things we get into at that point in time, another example of Nick Saban, or as I've called him in the past, Stephen A. Saban, really leaning on that relationship with ESPN, making himself available to the worldwide leader in sports, and I would think you could say maybe getting something in return for that to the tune of favorable coverage. Another example of that to talk about here today. We will do that in just a minute. I'm really glad to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now, and then more fun after that's done here on D&D, presented by ESOG, here today.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
was a really good week last week for Georgia recruiting that felt like the same conversations you and I have been having for years. You had a really impressive running back, Lavoisier Carroll, obviously Micah Morris, a guy that we spent a good bit of time talking about. We got together last week. So let me do something on Carroll here kind of off the top for us when it comes to a recruiting conversation. And this is the part of Carroll's story that fascinates me. I can't tell if Georgia only recently decided it really wanted to be in on Lavoisier Carroll, or if this is one of those things where Georgia was really in on Carroll the entire time, and to the perception of some people who follow UGA recruiting closely, maybe it just didn't really seem that way. Certainly, when you and I have talked about running backs, it seems like we've talked about other names more so than Carroll, and not because he's not a big-time prospect, just because there were seemingly reasons to mention other players more so, and yet here is Carroll and UGA both pouncing on the opportunity to get involved with each other last week. What is the perception, what is the reality here in terms of below the surface, how much of a bond was there between Lavoisier and UGA all this time?
Yeah, so let me make sure the visual effect here. I'm going to crack the knuckles on this one a little bit. There's perception, Brandon, but there's also reality. Let me speak constitution here. I hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, let's face it, Brandon, Will Shipley's really good. Trevion Henderson is really good. He's the guy that goes throughout his whole entire, I think it's a 15-minute junior highlight tape, Brandon, and he doesn't get tackled on a touchdown ever.
Yeah.
So he's really good. Evan Pryor's really good. I think the sense there was Pryor and Henderson locked themselves into Ohio State. Shipley seems like he's going to end up at Stanford or Notre Dame or even Clemson, one of those three schools. I think it was about time, maybe like 2 weeks ago, where Georgia kind of saw the way the green, they kind of read the green a little bit, Brandon, and they went, this doesn't seem enviable. This doesn't seem enviable. This is probably not a good spot. Georgia wants to take two backs in this class to get back to five with the expected departure of a great, healthy Zamir White junior year, or excuse me, redshirt sophomore year, and then a great year for James Cook. So Georgia needed two. Now, make no mistake about it, the number one priority I feel for this class is Donovan Edwards up in Michigan. And then you see names like, Brandon, a great name shows up like Cody Brown. Cody Brown is a marvelous football player. He's got a 4.0 GPA. I've said on Twitter he has 4.0 film. But the stark reality here, the God's honest truth is Cody Brown is a lot like Kendall Milton. And maybe that's a lot like Kenny McIntosh. And with what Georgia's wanting to do now by launching the ball, throwing the ball around, they don't want to dictate what they're going to do with personnel settings. Because if you bring in a Kendall, as talented and athletic as he is, most people are going to think Georgia's most likely going to attack the center of the defense. They're going to run between the tackles with Kendall. When they bring in a guy like Donovan Edwards, all three downs everywhere on the field is in play because he can do whatever. Georgia doesn't have a guy like that. I think a Donovan Edwards is a lot like a James Cook. But maybe it's the James Cook that everybody wanted to see from the jump at Georgia. And then you've got a guy like DeAndre Swift who just matriculated out to the NFL from the University of Georgia. That's why I think Georgia and Carroll are a match, because they don't have a guy quite like his skill set is not exactly like Kendall's, not exactly like Cody Brown's. He would bring something different. And, you know, the one name I want to make sure people remember, and even I'm guilty of this, Brandon, is we're not writing, talking, speechifying, letting the fans remember the name Dejon Edwards enough.
Okay.
Because if you saw that young man at Colquitt County, his senior film was glorious. And the plays he made, the physicality he showed, that's the one thing Del McGill always looks for, Brandon. They look for, okay, my lineman will get you so many yards. This play call, this scheme will get you so many yards. What can you get the University of Georgia when it's just you and open space and the defender? Do you get two or three, or do you get five, six, or seven, or 12 more? That's the distinct quality Georgia looks for in a running back. That's what Dejon Edwards has. So with Carroll, I even asked him, this is the last thought I'll say, is I asked Lavoisier, I said, did it feel like this guy was going here, this guy was going here, and all of a sudden Georgia rolled the volume up? And he agreed with me. He said that's what it felt like.
Before I take your comments for Jeff's intel, let me squeeze in one more question for Jeff, for myself here for a moment. When you look at Micah Morris, the guy that just committed last week, Jeff, and we talked a lot about Morris last week and, you know, the impact that Luke has, the impact of all of this. How much do you think of Morris? And I asked John Stinchcomb about this yesterday. He gave kind of an interesting answer that he thinks that Morris is sort of a fit for anyone's offensive line.
But how much do you think Morris, the footwork, things like that, kind of fit into what many of us believe and what some other offensive linemen have told us that the transition under Matt Luke is going to be to a more athletic offensive line? How much does Morris play into that talking point that maybe Matt Luke really is looking for something a little bit different than what Sam Pittman was looking for?
I think it's interesting, Brandon. I'm going to have to use Pittman and Luke in the same conversation because I think it's interesting. Micah Morris, Terrence Ferguson, and Amarius Mims, those are all fits for Sam Pittman and Matt Luke, which means, simply put, these are future high NFL draft picks. They've got the great body of work. They've got the great bodies. I think Mike is up to about 6'5", 320. Folks, listen in real close. That young man, if you watch his film, he still was going to be 17 years old this fall. So going to be a very young kid, going to enroll early. What I think is great about Mike is he's shown the ability to play in a wing tee and also a spread set there at Camden County. You've seen the scheme evolve under Bob Spire down there at Camden County, former head coach at North Gwinnett, one of the best high school coaches in the state of Georgia. And I think Mike is a guy that you go, man, I don't know if he's a left, but I think he's a right, and I think he can play either guard spot. I asked him that question. He said he thought he could play anything except for maybe center. He hasn't done some snaps in a while. I think Mike is just a good type Cade Mays type lineman for Georgia. And, folks, that's not a sign of disrespect whatsoever, because Georgia and Matt Luke, they're always going to get to the point where they go, who are my best five offensive linemen? And if that means a guy like Jamari Sawyer can get on the field at tackle or a guard, if that means that your best five include something radical with like maybe a Trey Hill at a guard or maybe a Cedric Von Prahn in a center, you want your best five football players up there, especially those guys with the adaptability to do it all. I think the interesting part of that question are who are the guys that are fits for Matt Luke that were not fits for Sam Pittman. And I would go Cameron Kinney. I would go Austin Blaski. I would go Devin Willock in the 2020 class. But then also a very clear name is Dylan Fairchild in the 2021 class.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Jeff, in our Facebook comment section, Chad Williams asked about a name we haven't talked about in a while, and that's Zach Evans. I know you're going to roll your eyes on this, but here's my take on all of this. Assuming that Evans was going to be eligible to play somewhere this fall, it's hard not to feel bad for the kid a little bit. And admittedly, I didn't want him to go to Florida, but the rumor was that he was going to visit Florida right around the time that the coronavirus shutdown began. So for any – and maybe there's another 2020 kid that's still out there on the board that I just don't know about. But for someone from the 2020 cycle that was taking his recruitment beyond signing day and sort of hoping to make a decision during the spring, to have that spring taken away from him, that really hurts. And so, I mean, at this point in time, I don't expect Evans to be at Georgia, and maybe it's more likely he doesn't go anywhere, just given the way all this has gone down. But for a guy that we used to talk about a lot, who was going to take some springtime, you know, a springtime visit and take some months to make a decision, Jeff, I have to admit, even if he's bound for somewhere other than UGA, even if he's bound ultimately for a UGA rival, I do sort of feel sorry for him a little bit that his decision process has been kind of jerked out from underneath him like this.
Yeah, you know, Brandon, I feel for the young man, even if some of this stuff is out of his control, or some of this stuff was self-inflicted by maybe his own bad decisions, or maybe, let me say, irresponsible decisions. But you know what, Brandon? I guess I'm always that guy that tries to add some positivity or add some, I guess I would say, humor to a lot of this. What's the only way this Zachary Evans story could have gotten any wilder than it was over the past 12 months? I'm talking about, you know, July, August, September, October, November, December, January. Oh, yeah. He planned to go ahead and take more visits this spring, but then a global pandemic happened where everybody was shut in and there would be no NCAA official or unofficial visits on campus until June the 1st. Now, that's the only way this story continues to, when you keep flipping the pages, how much wilder, how much zanier can it get? And you wonder now, there's going to be schools like Tennessee that will be foaming at the mouth to take him, and Ole Miss, and I guess even Florida. You just wonder how quickly he's going to be able to acclimate when he can't go see these schools. And I almost wonder, of all the people that should commit right now and should figure it out, find some clarity or some anchor to what their future holds and what the future is going to be like. I think sometimes I scratch my head when we get these questions about Zach Evans all the time. I'm like, why in the world is that guy not committed anywhere? Of all the people that need to commit right now and to put a foot down somewhere, that's Zach Evans.
On our YouTube comment section, Mark Morris asked about a player comparison for Lavoisier Carroll. Is there someone that comes to mind for you that reminds you of Carroll?
He said DeAndre Swift, but to me, Carroll looks like he fancies himself on that one cut and go and have, you know, brilliant speed. I think even Lavoisier thinks his time in the 40 is now 4.3-ish. His huddle profile prospect page has him as a 4.44. He's about 6 feet, maybe a little over that. He's about 199 pounds, excuse me. He wants to get up to 205, 210. I see a little bit of Marino to his game, maybe without a lot of that wiggle. He's just a guy, you look at his film, Brandon, let's face it, I'm going to be totally honest. When you put his film up next to Dejon Edwards' film, for example, you look at Dejon and really high quality of competition. He shows a little bit more as a pass protector. He shows a little bit more out of the backfield. I mean, Brandon, go watch that film. If you know, for a man that doesn't have Netflix in his home, man, you should go watch Dejon Edwards in his senior film. That second play on the tape was glorious. I must have watched that about 18 times, how he's breaking tackles, and he's got a nice little 14-yard run. Somebody tries to tackle him. He twists away. He gets 3 more yards. Then someone stones him. He twists away from that and gets 8 or 9 more yards. Brilliant film, and you just wonder about that. And so Lavoisier's bigger. Lavoisier's a little faster than Dejon Edwards. We're both talking about some really good football players here. And with one thing I wanted to make sure I wrote about over the weekend, I don't know if everybody caught it or not while they were hunting eggs or not hunting eggs or dying eggs, was I asked Carroll, this is a natural question, Brandon. This is a reporter's question. I asked him, I said, okay, man, what is all this 5 official visit stuff like? Are you, because in one breath, he's like, Georgia's home. Georgia was the best. Georgia's RBU. And then it's like, but yeah, I'm going to take my 5 official visits. Well, for starters, one of his top 5 was Ohio State. That option's gone. Ohio State's out. Tennessee's in. And he says he feels like he could go to any of these schools because he likes all of them. So, you know, that's the thing, man, that Carroll, lots of our readers and lots of the people on Dog Nation wonder about. I think somebody on our webpage said this feels about as solid right now as some Jell-O. I think it's a little more than that simply because Georgia sees him as a great accessory piece or a great 1B back in this class with Donovan Edwards should he choose Georgia. And the other thing you got to think about is he's only an hour and 20 away from home. He mentions about what a dream it would be like to run behind, you know, a guy like Micah Morris, potentially guys like Amarius Mims and TJ Ferguson in this class. So he definitely realizes all the benefits of staying home and being a Bulldog.
Steven Vinzani on our YouTube comment section asked about, it was announced that Kirby Smart's in a live tweet, the replay of the Georgia-Notre Dame game on Saturday on the SEC Network. You think we'd get anything interesting from Kirby on the live tweeting of the Notre Dame game on Saturday? You think he reveals any secrets?
So it's live tweeting of G-Day, correct? Or is it the Notre Dame game?
It's going to be the Notre Dame game on the SEC Network.
Well, that's much better. I wonder if he would talk about, you know, I think it's all going to be what Kirby chooses it to be. If he's very revealing here and he says, you know, I think this is where we should have went there. This was kind of some behind the scenes on what they were thinking there with that play call. I think it would be a great teaching class. You know, Kirby's so good in the coaching clinic mode, especially with some of the recent reporting from Mike Griffith on our own pages of Dog Nation. He's such a guy that teaches the game very well. Remember, his dad was a high school coach. His mom is an English teacher. If he really got into it and he said, look right here, this is what we wanted to do schematically. This was here. You remember how revealing he was, Brandon, after the LSU game?
Yeah.
If he sits there and he goes, this is why I think we brought Todd Monken in. We need the guy that needs to be able to take advantage of this formation right here, and we don't have that. I think that the whole live tweeting thing is going to be as brilliant
awesome
as Kirby Smart.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Something tells me that Kirby, not typically all that forthright, something tells me we don't quite get that from him. But I enjoy being that kind of candor from you. With that in mind, Jennifer Wheat Rucker mentioning Warren Erickson, a guy we did see a lot of in the Sugar Bowl and a guy that certainly has a chance to earn one of those starting jobs here this year as well. What do you make of Erickson right now, probably more so as a guard than a center, and I guess the rest of the competition in the interior of UGA's offensive line?
Yeah, Brandon, I would say Erickson is a guy that would fit the Luke model very well. remember, there were a lot of folks. I want to make sure people were paying attention for the Sugar Bowl last year. Remember, Xavier Truss was a guy that was supposed to play a lot in that game, and he did not. Guys like Warren Erickson started the game. Cade Mays was in the game. Solomon Kinley was in the game. Jamari Salyer was in the game. Erickson is a guy. I remember covering him for so long, Brandon. He was a great tackle. He moved to guard, and you thought, oh, when you move a tackle and a good high school tackle, a great high school all-state tackle into guard, then that's even better. And then when you think about him playing center, that's even better as well. Warren Erickson's got that great combination of savvy, acumen, smarts, aptitude, strength. He's got good feet. The way he blocks out on the edge was always very good for North Gwinnett. Came from a great high school program. And then, Brandon, I know everybody gets infatuated with these freshmen. It's partly my fault. But you take any physical contest, I think Warren Erickson is now 3 years removed from his high school prom.
Yeah.
And or he will be this fall. And that's a 20-year-old kid, a 21-year-old kid versus, I don't care how good these 17 and 18-year-old guys are, Erickson has practiced against the Georgia defensive line for – he was an early enrollee, Brandon. Remember when the 2018 class came around? Warren Erickson was an early enrollee. He's already gone through two spring practices at Georgia.
Let's squeeze in a couple more and kind of rapid fire if we can. Derek Tillman asking about Amarius Mims. How are things looking between he and George at the moment?
Yeah, I don't know if – I'll be honest. I don't know if I bought that. A lot of the reports that he had settled on his top 10 and he gave the 10 out in order and Georgia was trailing Alabama. I don't know if I'm going to – I don't know if I would buy that. I know Georgia fans would say they would hope that it would be dubious. I think it's always going to come down to Georgia and maybe Alabama with Amarius Mims. I think he's just having fun right now. If you ask me, I don't think his decision goes all the way to his October birth date, which he planned to do, make his commitment known on October the 14th. I don't think this thing goes that long.
Johnny Lester asking about the live tweeting from Kirby. Is that a recruiting opportunity, the kind of thing that he can send some, I guess, from a recruiting standpoint? He doesn't have to send – well, I guess he can't mention the recruits by name even on Twitter. Is it a chance to kind of give some wink, wink, nod, nods in the direction of some recruits?
Oh, yeah. He can sit there and go, you know, see these plays right here made by J.R. Reed? We don't have J.R. Reed back this year. I wonder who we're going to have to defend the back line for Georgia anymore. He's like, I wish we had a big, tall, physical safety with maybe some of that South Florida speed to go with it.
Yeah,
more range, more length. I think you're still within the boundaries of normal recruiting there when he does that. Or he could just simply look at positions, Brandon, and he could go, see this guy, see this guy, see this guy. They're not going to be on the field anymore. That's why we need to emphasize this position in 2021.
I'm not a stickler for rules. I don't know the rules all that well. I'm sort of generally aware of them. But Smart could retweet recruits during this. He just can't mention them in his own text. Like, he can't, like, you know, tweet on top of the retweet. But if he were to retweet a James Williams or retweet a whomever else, that's within the boundaries of all of this, right? If James Williams said, hey, I'm enjoying watching the SEC Network with at Kirby Smart, Smart could retweet that and that would be in bounds, right?
Correct. Yeah, that would be between the uprights, Brandon. That would be all safe and legal within the world, the big boy world of high stakes college football recruiting.
No doubt about that. Last one, BTW says, when you look at the college game, that Kirby should look at Ed Orgeron to see how the college game is changing. Do you think the path that Orgeron traveled last year and the one that Nick Saban traveled, you know, a couple years prior to that, is that the blueprint for the journey that Kirby himself also needs to go on with what is obviously a need to upgrade the performance of the offense, but possibly even alter the way in which the offense plays?
Yeah, And Brandon, obviously LSU kind of hit on all cylinders there with Burrow, with Brady, and then let's face it, if he had a pedestrian group of wideouts last year, I don't think Burrow would have been as brilliant. But when you look at the options he really had four or five guys that were danger level threats on the offense. Burrow brought the ability to just extend every play. Burrow was also a graduate transfer, Brandon, so he only had to take one online class. He could devote as many hours as he wanted to the LSU system. And it resulted in him meeting with all the receivers together, meeting with all the receivers individually. He had a lot more than those, those normal hours that a normal college quarterback like a Jake Fromm or Trevor Lawrence had to just work on LSU football. In some ways, when he did all this work independently and within the rules, he was allowed to treat this like he was already a professional football player. I think that's the big thing with the scheme and opening up. And look what Georgia's trying to do. They're bringing in a guy that has air raid concepts all over his background. They're bringing in what I felt was the best haul of wide receiver recruits in the history of the University of Georgia. So the pieces are all going to be there. He's got a deep ball arm in Jamie Newman. So a lot of those ingredients in the gumbo to sort of get sort of like LSU are going to be there for Georgia this fall.
Good stuff, Jeff. We appreciate your time. We'll look forward to reading you at the forum at forum.dognation.com, online at dognation.com, and, of course, here again on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia very soon, and in your own program, Before the Hedge, is presented by Kroger on Wednesday night.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really fun to be a part of the conversation with Jeff Sintel there a few moments ago. Of course, that from the video broadcast that we did earlier today. As I've told you before, right now, doing Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia is just kind of a different thing all the way around the regular, normal broadcast that we've done. Hard to do that via video right now. I think our technological capabilities have increased massively since we've been doing this at home, but still the full show the way we all have always done it. Not quite the easiest thing to do from my home here, but podcast radio, we're able to deliver the traditional broadcast that way, which has been great. Jeff was on with us via video here today, so check it out if you didn't see it, and be part of the comment section, the fun interactive stuff we do back and forth. I love being able to do that. It's part of our R.S. Andrews cool down. And of course, R.S. Andrews is known for fixing air conditioning problems and heating, electrical issues, plumbing issues. Your water heater goes out. Many times R.S. Andrews can replace that for you in the same day. Obviously, we're locked in our homes a lot more than many of us would want to be. What makes that even worse is if your air conditioning goes out. So if you're worried, yours might. Trust R.S. Andrews for that smiley tune-up to get your system back to factory fresh specs. You can find out all about it. Learn more about Dari and the whole team over at R.S. Andrews, why they've been delivering smiles for so many years. Just check out rsandrews.com for a lot more on that. A couple of SEC through stories I want to get to here for a moment. I thought this was kind of interesting, and this is going to kind of come across with like sort of a conspiratorial slant. I don't necessarily mean for it to be that way. But ESPN has announced that Nick Saban's done two episodes of a show they're going to call Detail. It's going to air on ESPN Plus. And in the shows, what Saban does is he breaks down former Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa and former LSU quarterback Joe Burrow as NFL prospects. Obviously, Saban's got great insight on both these guys, having game planned against Burrow and coached up Tua Tagovailoa. I would imagine this is probably pretty good programming. Let me give you a different kind of way to think about this here for a moment. It just came out the other day that Nick Saban got an email address for the very first time. So here's a guy in Nick Saban who doesn't even have email. I really, at this point in time, don't even know anyone who doesn't have some form of email. I mean, your grandparents or anybody. Email is fairly ubiquitous around the world now, and yet until recently, Nick Saban did not have an email address. That is how much Saban has apparently valued his privacy and how much Saban doesn't necessarily want to be always available to the rest of the world. Am I right in saying that Nick Saban is still not on Twitter? Am I right in saying that? I believe I am. Even though most SEC coaches use Twitter as a pretty effective recruiting device to stay in touch with people and recruits and kind of what's going on, Nick Saban is still not on Twitter. This is not a guy who just sort of frivolously gets involved in every form of media that's available, in other words, including social media. So with that in mind, Nick Saban is frequently on ESPN, the tune here of essentially acting as a de facto host for a couple of episodes of a show that's going to air on ESPN Plus. Now, as I said before, this is going to come across as kind of a conspiratorial bent, and I don't mean for it to come across that way because I'm not necessarily even mad about this. I'm just pointing it out that Nick Saban, who has kind of given the stiff arm to so many other forms of connection, so many other forms of social media, if he's doing this kind of thing for ESPN, he obviously sees some value in doing that. Now, at face value, the simple value is, well, gosh, this is great for recruiting to see your head coach on there talking about quarterbacks, and it probably is. What's the value beyond that? I've joked before that Nick Saban, to me, is like Stephen A. Saban. He shows up so much on ESPN, he's become quite accessible in terms of getting quoted by a couple of the ESPN writers there at ESPN.com. And typically, things like this in media aren't done without some sort of, as they would say, quid pro quo. Doing something to get something, providing coverage for ESPN in exchange for favorable coverage in return. Is that suggesting too much to say some of that has gone on? You should seek this information out for yourself. Do a Google search of recent ESPN stories involving Nick Saban and decide for yourself how critical or not critical that has been of him. Listen, it's probably good business for ESPN. Saban's got a lot of gravitas. His voice really carries some weight. It probably really matters. But for a guy in Saban who is notoriously reclusive, what has ESPN had to offer up to be granted a little access into Nick Saban's time? Probably a question worth asking, and we'll make that your SEC through. Of course, I guess the flip side of all this is Kirby Smart having a chance to do the same kind of stuff. Would he do it? Probably fair to say that at this point, Smart's name doesn't carry as much weight as Saban's probably does for something like this for ESPN. But as Georgia continues to have success, Smart continues to win, he's going to be asked to do more of these kinds of things. And I think legitimately, Smart is also a guy that doesn't necessarily love these interactions with the media, even the national media, who obviously has a huge platform it can offer to him. Even that kind of stuff, it seems like Smart's a little reluctant to want to get involved with that, but there's obviously some value in potentially making that trade-off. Saban seems to have learned that. It'll be interesting to see the path that Smart travels down on that same journey here over the course of the next couple of years. Started the show with some talk on the lousy, stinking Gators. Good way to end it as well, especially when I can remind you that it's been 1,263 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Good stuff. Thanks for being with us, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.